Okay. I'm going to try this again on my phone, even though three parshiyum in the last few days, weeks, have been, like, cut off in the middle for some reason. So I'm going to try to keep an eye and make sure the recording is actually working. Otherwise, I'm going to try to go back and re-record those parshas, and several people have emailed me about them and said, that was broken, I wanted to hear what happened in the middle. Whatever. You guys heard it in person, so that didn't get cut off. Okay, so I've mentioned a few times, I figured I'd actually bring it in. This is a very helpful little sefer by Rav Avnon Bazak, who's a Ram at Gush, called Nekudat Pticha. So there is, or maybe was, it exists in some form, but not exactly the same as it once was, a weekly Dvar Torah paper written in the religious Zionist world, put out by Machon Selmet, Shabbat B'Shabbato, I think it's called. And for a few years at least, Rav Bazak wrote the opening Dvar Torah, which was properly called Nekudat Pticha, right? It's a point of departure. Right, an opening point in the parsha, and then he eventually published a few years worth into Nekudat Pticha. I think there's an expanded version as well. They're very nice because they're very, very short, and they always are pointed and open up a discussion. So he has a very interesting discussion here on Binyamin's name. So Binyamin has two names, right? He's given two different names by his parents. Right? So his mother gives him the name Ben-Oni, the child of my affliction. What? And what? Yeah. And his father calls him Binyamin. As the pasuk tells you, right? Vayhi b'tzeit nafsha ki meita v'tikra shemo Ben-Oni v'aviv kara lo Binyamin. So what exactly is the difference? So over the years, I've heard different words, right? The pessimistic versus optimistic, right? There's the son of my sorrow, which is Rachel, versus the, like, my right-hand man, or the, right, the one who'll support me in my old age, right? He'll be like my right hand of Yaakov. You know, obviously that may depend on who's dying in that moment. You know, I can't really blame her at that point. She's actually dying and dies in the process. So for her, it's less of mixed emotions than it is for Yaakov. But Rav Bazak suggests something which I hadn't heard, as follows. Chazal take it as a given that the reason that Rachel dies is because of what? Chazal take it as a given that she dies because of what? What? Right, something to do with the story of stealing the trafim. But what aspect of that story is a little bit unclear. Right, Rashi already quotes this tradition, right? But there are really two things in that story that could be the cause of her death. So one is the way that Sean just formulated it, which is she died because she stole the trafim, right? And that was the problem, right? There was something problematic there. She's being punished. The second possibility, which is what Rashi himself says, is the klala, right? The klala because of that, right? Meaning because Lavan had chased, and Lavan had accused him of stealing, so Yaakov cursed anyone who stole it and said anyone who stole it will die. So it's not the fact that she stole it, but the subsequent curse that Yaakov put on anybody who stole it. So Rav Bazak says, well, that question may actually depend on yet another machloket in Chazal, which is what were the trafim? So here there are two main deot, both reflected in different midrashei Chazal. One is the one that Rashi himself quotes, which is that trafim are avodah zarah, Trafim are the idols. And why did she steal the idols? To stop her father from worshiping, right? This is the tradition of Rashi, right? Rashi says, and Rav Bazak points out this is actually a very coherent and cohesive theory of what happens in the parasha. She steals idols to prevent her father from worshiping idols. And therefore, the stealing itself is not problematic because she stole it to prevent him from worshiping idols. Presumably, that's a good thing. It may be stupid, right? And that's what the Abarbanel points out, which is he's an idolater. He can make another god, right? Idols are just, right? They're just statues. If you think you can worship a statue, you'll make another one, right? So Abarbanel says it might be foolish to think that you can stop your father from worshiping idols by stealing them. But fundamentally, there's nothing presumably religiously wrong with her wanting her father to not be an idolater and therefore taking away the idols. Therefore, it would be strange to say that she died because she stole the idols. Hence, Rashi, following this Midrashic tradition, says, no, she died because of the curse. Right, that because Yaakov cursed whoever stole it, so even though he misunderstood what was going on, in the end of the day, there's a curse, and that's what led to her death. But there's another tradition, which is, what are the Trafim? So the Medrash Tanhuma says that they're not idolatry, and this is the position of the Ibn Ezra as well, but rather they were objects of divination. Right, they were used to tell the future and to figure things out. And Rachel stole them because she didn't want Lavan to be able to figure out where they went. So here, if this is why she stole them, then there might actually be a problem in stealing them. Because they started this whole journey. Why did they choose to leave now? Because Hashem had told Yaakov, go home, I promise you, I'll protect you. So whether you are a Maimonidean and think that all magic stuff is garbage and doesn't really exist, or you think it does work, either way, to believe that you are in danger because of magic, if God has given you an explicit promise that he's going to protect you, is a lack of emunah. Right, again, if you think that magic doesn't work at all, so for sure there's something lacking your emunah to take away the magic things to prevent yourself from being caught. But if God said he's going to protect you, there's also a lack of emunah, even if you think the magic works, because God is still more powerful than magic. And therefore, by stealing them to protect yourself, she would be revealing a certain lack of faith in God's promise to protect the family after instructing them to leave. So Rav Bazak argues that this might be another way of understanding the machloket Yaakov and Rachel in terms of the names. Because Yamin, it means right, but often what is the right hand associated with in Tanakh, and therefore becomes a stand-in for a shvua, right? A vow. So, for example, in Tehillim Kuf Mem Dalet, Asher Pihem Diber Shav, right? Talking about his idolaters, their mouths speak falsehoods. V'yiminam yimin sheker. The right hand is a right hand of falsehood. Because since you raise your right hand or put your right hand on a holy object to make a swear, so sometimes a vow is just referred to as yiminam. Right? It's shorthand. They're right hand. Or tishkach yemini, right? Things like that, right? We talk about that as commitments being on the right. So Yaakov might be saying, Ben Yamin, the son who was born when my wife died because of the vow I had taken, Ben Yamin. On the other hand, Ben Oni, right? So what is Aleph Vav Nun? So in Zechariah, the pasuk that the Tanchuma invokes, Trafim Dibru Aven, right? Aleph Vav Nun is the divining powers of these Trafim. And therefore she might think Ben Oni, right? I die, right? This Rachel saying that she died because she related to the powers of the Trafim. So therefore, Rav Bazak argues that it could be that it's not just, right, that they're actually Rachel and Yaakov, so to speak, are arguing or have different perspectives on whether she died because of the vow, which is represented by the word Yamin, or because of her belief in the power of the Trafim, which is Aleph Vav Nun, hence Ben Oni. So that's Rav Bazak's suggestion as another perspective on this Machloket HaShemot, between Rachel and Yaakov.